on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Welcome to InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you useful information and answer any questions you might have, as long as they're financial. Okay, let's go to Jim in Carlsbad. How are you doing, Jim?
The question I had was about a mutual fund versus the exchange-traded fund. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the difference between those?
Okay, ETFs are fairly new, and there's lots, and it's kind of exploding, and take a lot of money out of the mutual funds, so it's kind of an interesting thing. The mutual fund has a manager, okay? He may be a large-cap mutual fund. He may be a small-cap. He may have a discipline that he is employing, and he states that in the prospectus. And he says, I'm going to buy large-cap stocks. So he goes out and buys those large-cap, and he manages, buys and sells, and he tries to manage that portfolio to make money. A ETF, exchange-traded fund, is an unmanaged fund. It follows indexes, like the QQQs or the SPYs, or it can follow a sector, like the insurance sector or the banking sector or oil sector. It could be an ETF that just has those group of stocks in them. But they're not managed at this point. Most of the time, they're not managed. They're not managing the ETFs. You're just buying that group of stocks, and there you go. So one is much more managed than the other. On the other hand, ETFs are much cheaper because they're not managed. It's the cheaper fees than a mutual fund.
So ETFs are more focused on industry groups then, and rather than capital value?
And areas of the world, even country-specific sometimes, or just areas of the market, yes.
Great.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Jason from New Hampshire, and I was calling to ask about my father in retirement. He's 58 right now and plans on retiring when he's 67. He doesn't have any retirement savings but would like to start conservatively. And I'm just curious what would be the best approach slash strategy for him. Would love to hear back from you. Thanks.
Okay, so he wants to be conservative. So he doesn't want to be fully in the stock market. That's not conservative. That's aggressive. But what he can do is find an ETF or other type of investment that's not necessarily fully exposed to stocks. And it could be a balanced type of program where you have stocks and bonds. And he really should just keep buying it every paycheck or every month, the same amount. That's called dollar cost averaging. And just keep doing it for the next 10 years. Just keep doing it, no matter if the market goes down or up. Just keep doing it. And he'll have a decent amount of money when he retires. Now, since he's getting such a very late start, unless he puts a lot of money away every month, he's not going to have that great of a pile of money to live on in retirement. So he's got to have some other sources of income, Social Security or whatever else. You got to figure that out. Very, very important.
Good evening, Steve and Justin. Dylan here. I'm calling from Oregon. I have a question about index funds and dividends. What happens with the dividends that are issued to the fund managers, which I assume are buying the individual stocks that comprise the index? Do the fund investors ever see that money? For instance, the majority of my portfolio is lumped into Schwab's SWPPX, which tracks S&P 500, and I know that a handful of stocks in that index issue dividends. Could I be potentially missing out on some extra income here? Thank you, and I look forward to your answer.
So the dividends come into the index, okay? The dividends are paid to the index, and the net asset value, the price of that index, goes down the exact amount of the dividend. So if you got a 30 cents dividend, that stock, that ETF or index fund will go down that exact same amount. The same is true for stocks. If you own AT&T and they paid a 6% dividend, your stock price will go down 6%. Exactly the same amount of the dividend. Did you know that? See, some people think they can buy the stock the day before they go ex-dividend, meaning that the day before they pay the dividend, and therefore they'll make the dividend and then sell the stock, and they just made the dividend without any risk. That's wrong. When they go ex-dividend, the stock opens up at the exact amount of the dividend down on the price. Same thing was true with the indexes. Now, of course, the index has the money, right? So they got to reinvest it. If you had the individual stock, you would have the money, and you could do whatever you want with it. But an index doesn't pay it out to you necessarily. You know, some of the ETFs specialize in paying it out to you. They'll pay it out to you. So it depends on, you got to know how that ETF or index is structured, how they do that. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Rob in Georgia. He wants to talk about saving money for a home purchase.
Hey, Justin, how are you? Here's my question for tonight. I handle the finances and savings for two of my daughters, and they're much smarter and make a little bit more money than their old man. They've got 6 months worth of savings, and they're trying to save up for both either a car or a house. And right now we've just got about $50,000 just in a checking account. And I was wondering if you can recommend, is there a short-term ETF for savings for this time to get a little higher reward, so to speak?
Yeah, I use Marcus by Goldman Sachs. I'll tell you, that's you get about 0.5%. It's nothing great. You know, I believe, some excess cash in there. It's better than most checking or savings accounts that you're probably getting next to nothing. 0.5% also sounds like next to nothing as well, but at least it's FDIC insured and easy to get money in and out. So that's the best you can do. There are some other, you maybe get a bit higher than that, and you can go to like bankrate.com and look for FDIC insured money market accounts or high yield savings accounts, things like that. It's probably the best way to find it, but Marcus is one I've seen that has the best rate for the kind of safety that I want. So that's probably the best you can do, unfortunately, in this very low interest rate environment.
That's excellent. And again, love the show. Keep up the good work, guys.
Appreciate it, Rob.
Hi, Steve and Justin. It's Steve Osier calling from New Hampshire. Love the show. Just had a quick question about Roth 401k contributions inside my employer plan. So when it comes time to take those contributions out, typically how does that work? Because obviously I have traditional, and then I also have the Roth contribution inside my 401k. So I was curious if you guys could fill me in on generally how that process works. So I really appreciate it. I look forward to the answer on the podcast.
Well, I'm assuming you're talking about getting the money out of your employer, first off. So if you do leave or you hit 59 and a half and you can do an in-service rollover, then you would open an IRA and a Roth IRA, and you would roll the pre-tax one, 401k, into your IRA, and your post-tax, the Roth portion, over into a Roth IRA. So it's pretty simple. You want to make sure those are separate, and I'm sure your 401k provider is going to keep those separate. And it's up to you after that to make sure that they're separate. And when you take money out, then what that does is it gives you the ability to pick and choose when you want to take that money out, depending on your tax situation. So in retirement, say you're in a high tax bracket for whatever reason. Maybe it's the year you do retire and you're still making a good amount of money and you retire maybe halfway through the year, for example, and you're in a decently high tax bracket. Then you can take money out of your Roth IRA and not add to your taxable income for that year. But let's say you're 5 years in retirement, 6 years in retirement. You don't have a lot of other income besides maybe Social Security. Maybe you have a pension or something, and you're in a low tax bracket, then you can say, okay, I'm going to take money out of my IRA, or even do a Roth conversion, into your Roth. And that's a strategy to think about as well. So that's more of a question for your tax professional, your CPA, to kind of guide you on the most tax-efficient way to take that distribution in retirement. Thanks for the call.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Let's talk to Amika. Hi, Amika. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
And thank you so much to you and Justin and the team for everything you all have been doing for us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I do have a question, not a particular like any stock question. The question I do have is, what do you think of the economy? Do you think like with the Fed starting to taper and also with the interest rate going up, what do you think the economy overall? Do you see more bullish action or are we going to be more bearish? With the time, you know, in the time we are living right now.
Okay, I think we're looking at about a 6% growth in the economy this year, GDP growth, and I also see growth next year of about 4%. I don't see us going into recession this year or next, and I don't think the Fed is going to raise the rates until next year or maybe late next year or even the year after. They will taper, and I think their first steps, and I know Justin does too, will be to slowly slow down their bond buying, which will tighten ever so slightly the liquidity in the market. But there's so much liquidity that liquidity is going to last for at least this year and into next. So I think our economy is fine for that period of time. I think when this COVID variant is fully in, notice that the market hasn't really collapsed. It's hitting hot, new highs. It's poking its head above highs. And even though this COVID variant is spreading, investors are not worried about it. Don't argue with the investors. Investors are smart with their money overall. So I think we're fine. We're going to have a correction, but I think it's a correction that you want to be a buyer of, not sell and get out and panic out of the market. That's what I think. Good call and good question, Amika. I appreciate that.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in New York, and he wants to talk about interest rates.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, I have a sizable amount of money in a bank account, just a traditional bank account, and I was wondering, I did not want to expose it to market fluctuations. I was hoping that I might just make an investment. If I want to use that money, it's not going to fluctuate up and down too much. So that's kind of what I was looking to do. Is there anything you might recommend for that, like a short-term fixed income bond or anything of that nature? I would like to avoid CDs.
Yeah, I would say the best thing, and this is what I use with my very short-term cash. Obviously, I don't have a lot of it. But I use a high-yield savings account. Marcus by Goldman Sachs is the one that I use. Get 0.5%. It's not great. Once again, I don't have a ton of money in there just because it's not something that I want to – I can do much better in the markets with my expertise. But it's always good to have a small amount in emergency savings, like you said. And that's not going to fluctuate. It's FDIC insured, et cetera. So that's probably the best way you can go. I know it doesn't sound very appetizing. It isn't very appetizing, but that's the world we live in. And if you want safety and you don't want CDs, and even CDs are not going to get much more than that anyway, I think your liquidity there, your safety, and at least something of a yield better than the 0.01%. I know JP Morgan, that's what they pay on their savings accounts because they don't need more deposits. So they have no reason to attract it. But that's what you're getting over at Marcus. But there are other ones. There are definitely other high yield savings accounts. Maybe there's a few that are a little bit more as well. You can shop for those around on the internet and just make sure that they're FDIC insured and they are reputable. Right.
You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you, 888-99-CHART, beginning our experience. We're here to answer your question.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Okay, we're going to go talk to Jean in Raleigh, North Carolina, relocating to a retirement spot. Are you there, Jean, or you're still moving?
Oh, no, it's a couple of years away, but I was curious. In the past, you know, you've talked about, in past shows, you've always talked about relocating from a high-cost state to a lower-cost state. And I'm wondering, have you seen any trends in the people you're dealing with, or you've heard news about people moving out of the country to particular areas for retirement to lower the cost, particularly areas in Mexico or Canada or even other countries?
Yeah, well, we call those expats. But I have a client, she lives in Oklahoma, which is not a high-cost place. But she likes to go to Mexico in the winter because it's so cold in Oklahoma. So that's what she does. And the cost is really, really low for her to lease a place for like 3 or 4 months, 5 months in Mexico. But there's also people that move completely out of the country and don't plan on coming back. I even talked about earlier this week or late last week about people, billionaires, moving out of the country and getting rid of their U.S. citizenship because of the high taxes. But one of the destinations people like is Panama. Now, I don't think I could take Panama because of the humidity, but you can live right on the water, lots of islands, and pretty reasonably. And people like it because they use U.S. dollar, they speak English, that kind of thing. So it's easy. I also had a client who moved to the Philippines, and he doesn't make much money. He wasn't wealthy, doesn't have a lot of retirement money, so he moved there. He can live very well on his Social Security alone in the Philippines. So, yeah, people move.
Two tips. I did hear about the Philippines, and I think in general what I heard is two good tips is to understand the entire season of wherever you live, the weather, and also know what type of rules apply to foreigners who own properties.
Yeah, you got – yeah, some places won't let you buy property. Some places won't let you in at all. Europe, a lot of places, you can't move to Europe. You just can't drop and say, I'm going to go move to France. You can't do that. They have very strict rules in various countries in Europe.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you. And Taylor has a question in Los Angeles. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
My question is about rolling over my 401k to my IRAs. I'm in my 20s, and I'm wondering, since I'm getting a cash disbursement to my IRA, should I worry about current prices right now when buying into new stocks, or is my time horizon just too far that it doesn't matter about finding good buying opportunities?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it too much because you're so young. The market might be a little pricey in certain sectors, but other sectors are not. I mean, there are places that you can put it that are not over. But I think time in the market is much more important than trying to time the market. You can't time the market. So, you know, if we were on the cusp of a recession, I might suggest, well, why don't you just wait till the recession happens, then put all the money in, at the recession, because the stock market tanks on a recession. But we're not on the cusp of a recession. It's not going to happen for a little while. So I'm thinking that you want to put the money in. I don't think you should wait. I really don't. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are the principals of KPP Financial, and they are independent financial advisors. This means they place their clients' interests ahead of the firm's. As part of that commitment, KPP Financial practices parallel investing, where Steve and Justin's accounts participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. You can learn more about parallel investing and the other KPP Financial programs at investtalk.com. The phone lines are open. Steve and Justin welcome your questions. Call now, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. This is Ray. My strategy is to get in to the stock when it's low and at the dip, and then sell it when it's high. I know it's not something that people like. I mean, you guys agree with that. But I'm doing okay. I'm doing better than what I was expecting. 75% of the time, I'm doing good. So I was wondering, is there anything wrong with this strategy? That's a conversation between me and my wife. She's buy and hold type. I'm not. So I was wondering, what would you think about that? Thank you.
Well, your strategy is basically buy the dip. And in a bull market, that works perfectly fine, right? Because every dip gets bought. And frankly, investors have been conditioned to invest this way, right? Because any dip, any major dip, the Fed will come in and kind of stimulate the economy. Now it's the government coming in and stimulate the economy and getting money into the hands of people and investors and companies. And so that's simply the market environment we're in. Now, in a bear market, buying the dip does not work, right? Because every dip may get bought, but guess what? That rally gets sold, and then it goes lower and lower. And so you're doing well because it works in an up environment, in a bull market environment. And so don't confuse your success with something that is going to work forever. It will work as long as we are in a bull market. And like I said earlier, different market environments, different strategies work. This is a buy and hold, or this is the buy the dip type of market, and that's why you are successful today.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
Of all the finance and investing podcasts and all the downloads in all the world, you've discovered InvestTalk.
At this time, do you think it would be better to keep it in this bond or move it to cash?
Looks like the sector is down today, so just thinking about, you know, potentially buying the dip.
And since InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to answering your questions with their unique blend of expert insight and unbiased guidance, you've got to ask yourself one question. Why haven't you called InvestTalk?
Hey, it's James from Australia. I'm loving the podcast.
You know you listen. You know you should call. You know you want to call.
So I was wondering the best options for long-term growth.
You'll get a reliable answer and the same positive feeling that tens of thousands of InvestTalk callers have already experienced.
Thank you so much. I love the show.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, everybody. Give me a call. Love to talk to you. We're live, and we're going to go to Mark in Morgan Hill. How you doing, Mark? Morgan Hill, by the way, is in California, up the coast a bit from me and down from San Jose, down from Silicon Valley. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question about closed-ended funds.
Uh-huh.
I discovered them about almost a year ago, and I went from investing a little bit to quite a bit, over 200,000 now I'm in them, including munis.
Okay.
They're doing really, really well. They're not talked about very much in investment circles.
No.
And it's hard to get information. So I wanted to ask you your thoughts on them. I realize there's risk involved, but so far, so good for me. I just wanted to know your thoughts.
Sure. A closed-end fund is neither good nor bad. It's a different type of investment. Okay. Everybody knows what a mutual fund is. Everybody knows what ETFs are. But closed-end funds have been around a lot longer than ETFs, exchange-traded funds. What's the difference is between a mutual fund, an ETF, and a closed-end fund? The closed-end fund has a finite number of shares. It's just, it can do anything that a mutual fund or ETF can do. Follow an index. It can buy and sell stocks. It can be a bond closed-end fund. But being that it has a finite number of shares, like a company, like a stock company, it can sell at higher than the net asset value of the fund's holding. So, you know, an open-end fund, which is a mutual fund or an ETF, means it always sells at what is the value of the holdings it has. A closed-end fund can sell at a discount to the value or a premium to the value. So you can buy a closed-end fund and you can pay more than what it's really worth. The holdings are worth less than what you have. Or you can buy at a discount and the holdings can be more. So don't think that it's really that different of an investment than all the others, other than it can sell at a discount or a premium. Of course, you would like to buy it at a discount because you're getting the stuff that it's holding cheaper than the market value is. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with having them. There's no, you know, there's no magic there. It's just that if you buy a good closed-end fund, you get a good managed fund. There you go. You get the assets that's in the fund. Okay. So don't, you know, they're fine, Mark. There's nothing wrong with them at all. Nothing wrong with them. But you do want to know if you're buying at, is it trading now? Has it done very well, as you suggested? Is it at a premium to what the holdings are? And maybe you want to, you know, sell some because it's at a premium. Okay? 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Jim in Indiana. How you doing, Jim?
Hi, Steve. I was calling today about rental prices and what I can hopefully take advantage of the situation.
Okay.
So I live about 25 minutes from probably the second largest city in Indiana.
Okay.
And so I guess you could categorize where I live as a suburb. The rental prices in the town that I live close to have gone up about 10% year over year.
Okay.
So, you know, it's still really affordable. It's Indiana. It's like 950 square feet. You know, you're going to pay about $850 a month.
Oh, wow.
But that's gone up. That's gone up 10% year over year from last year.
Uh-huh.
The town that I live in, you know, 900 square feet is going to cost you about $650 a month.
Oh, wow.
A month. And it's only gone up about 5% year over year. Now, the town I live in we have a very small college here in the town. And I'm looking at it going, okay, where is the opportunity in terms of future looking, is there an opportunity to buy rental properties? If I do, should I buy in the larger town that I'm further away from where I work, or should I buy where I live, where the prices of rent are not going up as quickly?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Where you want to concentrate on those places that have growth and some kind of magnet to draw in people. When I say that, you kind of touch on a little bit. You said there was a small college in your town. But what about one of the major colleges in Indiana? Those are magnets for young people and nightlife and, you know, activity. Also, Indiana's state capital, that's another place. Usually that's a magnet. Or a huge recreational or vacation spot that everybody loves to go to. You know, try to figure out some kind of, try to stay in an area where there's a magnet of some kind drawing people to that area, and I think you'll be more successful, and you'll have prices probably a little higher, but also probably going up that 10% instead of the 5%. So that's what I would suggest. When I was buying rentals, my magnet was on the West Coast, was something within a mile or two of the ocean. Does everybody want to live near the ocean? Okay. So that was my magnet that I used. I had six or seven properties at one time. And they were all within a mile or two of the ocean. I did very, very well with those properties because of that. So I think you just got to figure out, well, where's a good draw of people to? And where's the growth? Stay with the growth area, not the places that are stagnant, but with growth areas. Good question, too. Very good, Jim. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate it.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. And Steve and Justin, thank you for your loyalty. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. Your rating is a vote of confidence that leads to higher visibility and causes more people to discover and listen to InvestTalk. So please tell your friends and family members about the free InvestTalk downloads at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and InvestTalk.com. Remember to include your brief question when you review and rate on iTunes. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name is Todd in Colorado, 6-month listener here. Love the show. I have a question about where to store holdings for stock buying and investing. I have an IRA, but it's maxed for the year. Is it wise or even legal to have several IRA accounts? Or what is the best way to set up accounts to invest from? Anyway, appreciate everything you guys do. Love the show, and I look forward to hearing the answer. Have a good one.
Well, thank you for the kind words about my my grandfather, Jerry. But when it comes to IRAs, you can hold as many IRAs as you want. There's no limit. There's nothing illegal about having multiple IRAs. You can have different brokerage firms, same brokerage firm. Well, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but you can certainly do that. It's about the IRA contributions. That's what matters, is how much money. And you can have 6 IRAs and put 1,000 each every year for your $6,000 annual contribution. So if you have extra money, though, I would be putting, you can make non-deductible IRA contributions. That is something you can do. It becomes a little trickier to track, right? Because you have to make sure that the IRS knows that there's money in there. So when you take it out, that it's not taxed, etc. But you can also put that into a regular brokerage account and invest it that way. So no, there's nothing that prevents you from having multiple IRAs. It's definitely not illegal. It's just about the money that goes in. Let's go to Nadia in San Francisco. Let's talk about real estate.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call here.
No problem. Thanks for making it.
Sure. So I've been thinking about buying a condo in San Francisco for a while now. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get your opinion whether I should sell all my stock investment to put down as a down payment, or if I should keep my, you know, maybe put down like 10% and take a higher mortgage. So love to hear your opinion.
Well, with this interest rate environment, I would, and you're getting probably 2.5, 2.75 interest rate, I would put the lower amount down. I would avoid PMI, try to make sure that you're not paying any mortgage interest, but get that 20% down payment and then take the that low interest rate instead of putting it more towards the principal at this point. So that's the way I would think about it, because you're going to be able to earn more on your equity investments than you are on the mortgage rate at these levels. Now, if mortgage rates go back to 5-6%, which clearly would have an impact on the housing market, but your cost to borrow would be much higher, and then that calculus would be a bit different, especially in the taxable account where maybe you're earning 8-10% minus taxes, etc. So I would make sure you're not paying PMI, but you don't need to put down a drastic amount or pay off that mortgage, okay?
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Hi, my name is Sarah from Irvine, and I had a question about backdoor Roth IRA account. My husband and I, our income is too high for a Roth IRA, and I was wondering when a backdoor Roth IRA made sense and what the tax benefits and tax liabilities are. Thank you so much for your content. I love the podcast.
Okay, well, this is a pretty difficult question because it's specific to a person in a family situation. So do you have a 401k? Are you maxing that out too? Do you have a regular IRA and a Roth IRA? And are you putting money in both of those? A backdoor Roth IRA is where you take it out of the regular IRA and put it into the Roth. And what's benefit about that? Because when you move it, you can move bigger chunks of money than you can invest in any IRA any 1 year. And also, in a Roth, the money grows tax-free, whereas a regular IRA, all that money is going to be taxed as you withdraw it. So it's very specific to the people involved. So I can't just give you an overall answer whether it's good for you or not good for you.
Here comes another question, this time from a listener in Colorado.
Hi, guys. Raquel from Denver here, new listener and really enjoying learning more about investing, so thanks for that. I have a question. I lived overseas in Australia and left a decent chunk of money there in a bank account and a retirement account. Right now, with the exchange rate, I would lose 25% if I exchange to U.S. dollars from Aussie dollars. And I don't know if I could invest there or what I should do. Any tips would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, we hear this from time to time. Now, we're not international tax accountants, so you're probably going to have to find this information elsewhere. I'm not sure what the rules are on repatriating that money from Australia to the U.S. So I would go to another source for that. But I wouldn't look at what you would lose, right, by translating that back into dollars. Now, the dollar's down a bit, so hopefully that's improved recently compared to the Australian dollar. But I would think of it more of what is my opportunity cost, what am I invested in over there, can I do better over here, will it grow better over here, and trying to get that money back in. So I know a lot of people incorrectly try to get back to even, right? They don't want to take that loss, or you'll feel like it was a loss. So don't think of it that way. Think of the opportunity cost of being able to invest in here in the U.S. and have more control over those assets as well. So good luck in getting those assets moved over.
What are the dangers of short selling? Can anybody do it? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk.
Okay, remember, we love beginner questions. Everyone who listens to this program either is a beginner or was one at that one time. So we welcome your question at 888-99-CHART. Now, what is the question?
Is that when you hear a company say it's going to buy its own stock back, that's a good thing.
Yes.
But let's say the company's current stock price is $20. What price are they buying their own stock back?
They usually buy it in the open market, just like you would do that.
Right.
What they do, if you pay attention, David, they say, we're going to buy back $500 million worth of our own stock.
Right.
They'll say, we'll do that over the next year, 2 years, 5 years. They'll tell you the length of time.
Oh, okay.
And they will say that. And then they don't just go out and buy it like tomorrow. No, 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 no. And sometimes they'll buy it when they think it's the right time to buy it on low prices. Or the most common thing is they look for a downturn in that stock price, and they'll buy it then to try to hold the price up.
Do they, like, dollar cost average their own stock then?
Nope. They might buy $100 million today and then wait 6 months and buy another $200 million then. It's totally up to them, and they don't tell you what their plan is in detail.
Oh, okay. So has their plan ever been to drive their own stock price down purposely to buy shares?
Most of the time, no. It's to drive it up.
No, I mean to buy their stock back at a cheaper price.
No, they have no way to drive it down. They can't manipulate it. In other words, that would be very bad, and they would get in a lot of trouble by the SEC.
Oh, yeah, right. But, you know, these guys get in trouble all the time for doing crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay, if your answer is could they, the answer is yes.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, they could, sure.
Yeah, they certainly could. They generally don't. And you'll also find that they'll announce a buyback program, and they'll say they'll buy it back within 2 years, and 2 years pass, and they didn't fulfill their agreement to buy back their stocks. Sometimes they don't do what they say they're going to do, too.
Now, wouldn't they get in trouble for that? Because it sounds like that when you mention you're going to buy your own stock back, that would raise the price of the stock up.
You would think so. But they'll have reasons like we had better uses of the money. Maybe we wanted to put the money into buying a new company. That was an opportunity. You know, they'll come up with something. But I've seen them announce buybacks and then not actually follow through with the whole buyback.
Yeah, that's not right.
No. Appreciate it, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Bye.
Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Owen from Redding, California. I'm calling to ask on your opinion about the EV sector. I've been watching it for a while now, and I've been wanting to get some exposure to it, but it seems overpriced. So I've been watching XPeng, NIO, Tesla, Nikola, and all the stocks seem either way overpriced to me, or they seem like they're not a very good stock. So I was just wondering if you know of a cheaper stock that has a future that is in the EV market that's not so overpriced or overbought right now, or if you are looking at a certain stock and you're looking for a drawback. Thanks, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
Now, of course, we cannot just bring up companies and tell you to invest in them. Another one, the SEC wouldn't let us. But don't just look at, when you're talking about the electric vehicle market, don't just look at the car companies. Look at what parts do they get those from? What the parts in that car come from somewhere. They don't make them all. I mean, you know, so look deeper. And the technology that's really changing and a lot of money is being poured into it is the electric vehicle. In the electric vehicle industry is batteries. And that's why I suggest you look. So remember, Volkswagen said all their cars are going to go electric in the next few years. Well, that's a lot of batteries being produced by somebody. So widen your view. That's what I would say. And, you know, the big car companies also are going to go electric. Volkswagen, GM. GM just got recently their price upgraded by some analysts because of the electric vehicles that they're coming out with. So think more globally.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on Invest Talk.
Okay, let's go to Eric in San Mateo. How you doing, Eric? Want to talk about municipal bonds. How's it going?
Good, Steve. Thanks for your podcast. It's great.
You're welcome.
I have a question. So we had a managed account with Fidelity, and we took 20% out to buy a property, investment property. It kind of fell through.
Okay.
We kind of bought it. We sold the, it was all stock, so we took it out. We sold it at a profit, and the investment property fell through. So our advisor recommended, you know, since we sold at a profit and the market is really high right now, to invest it into a managed account for municipal bonds where it's tax-free. You'll get a 4-5% return. So in case we do have find another property to buy or when the market goes down to reinvest in the market. What are your thoughts on that strategy?
Okay. That depends. What tax bracket are you in?
The highest, probably.
Okay. Okay, so then a double tax-free benefit is a good one for you because when you buy municipal bonds in a particular state, and you're calling from KDOW, so I'm assuming you're in California. So the double tax-free, in other words, you don't have to pay income tax from this, on the money that you earn with state or the federal, could benefit you with an extra point or two of interest because you don't have to pay taxes on the money that you earn. The danger in that thinking is getting out of those bonds if you're going to use that money to buy real estate down the road. Not that you can't get out. Of course you could get out. You could sell them. But you don't know at what price you can get out. So the value of your municipal bonds, if interest rates keep going down, then you'll be able to get out of it at a higher price and you'll be fine. If interest rates start turning around on us in the next 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever, just know that that bond fund, even though it's a municipal bond, it will go down in value as yields go up. Okay? So the value could go down. For the time being, you know, they're not, you know, it's an okay strategy. Is it an ETF, exchange traded fund, or a mutual fund?
No, it'd be a managed account. So the managed account, they would buy about 30 municipal bonds and then have different maturity dates, so to spread it out.
So, okay, so then I don't really have a problem with that. I really don't, other than that the only danger is if interest rates start to rise on you. But that's kind of slim at this point. I don't think rates are going to go up anytime soon. So, Eric, I think I'll give you a thumbs up on that. I'm okay with that.
Okay. I appreciate that, Steve. Thanks for your input.
No problem. Thanks, Eric. Good luck. I hope you find some properties. Before we go, you can see more about today's topic. Go to InvestTalk.com. You want to contact me directly? Easy. Leave a message in the machine or go to InvestTalk.com. I'm money manager Steve Peasley, and I want to thank you for listening.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.